Welcome back to Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts. We are your hosts, Eric Hart
and Ashley Flowers. This week, we have one more spooky October episode for you. Last week, we spoke about scary stories and superstitions involving props and theater. And so this week, we're going to be talking about superstitions and scary stories about props in film and TV.
Yeah, obviously, film and TV, I think, have such a larger range of horror props and scary props. Horror film is much bigger genre than horror theater. Mm-hmm. So we got a lot of stuff we could talk about. I think the first film we wanted to touch on is Poltergeist.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. So I'm not a huge horror film person. I don't like to be scared. But I have seen Poltergeist, I will have to say. I've only seen the first one because I refused to watch the second and third one.
I think a lot of us have seen that because that was kind of that time in the 80s when you had like vaguely family-friendly horror movies. This was Steven Spielberg. Like, you don't do that nowadays.
Yeah, now they're scary.
Right.
So there is a scene in The Poltergeist where there's a huge storm, it's raining, and they reveal that they're actually buried on this mass grave. So you see all these skeletons popping up in their front yard, I think. Well, the rumor was that they used real skeletons in this film, and it cursed the whole entire cast and crew. And there were actually some random deaths that occurred after this film, and a lot of mysterious things happening after this film with the cast and with the crew. So Heather O'Rourke and Dominique Dunn actually died tragically after the films were done. Heather was the 5-year-old girl in the first movie who had that famous line, "They're here." Mm-hmm. And in the making of the third movie, she was actually rushed to the hospital and died. And she was only 12 years old. At first, they said, oh, she died of the flu. And then suddenly it was complications to something else and this and that. And they never really came out with the truth of how she died.
Right.
It was just very weird and random for this 12-year-old to randomly just be rushed to the hospital.
Yeah, very tragic.
So how the rumor of the real skeletons got started was from an interview with one of the actors saying, yeah, we used real skeletons and they didn't tell us this until afterwards. And of course, people were like, okay, sure, yeah, I'm sure they did. But actually, the props master, Bruce Kaysen, I believe I'm pronouncing his last name incorrectly, he actually did an interview saying that they were real. They were actually bought from a medical company that sold remains to medical schools for research and stuff. And he also mentioned, you know, this was the 80s. There weren't a lot of plastic skeletons just hanging around that you could buy cheaply. Now, if that's true or not, who knows? But I definitely would not want to be on set with a full yard of real skeletons.
Right.
That would freak me out.
You know, I have heard these vintage skeletons up to a certain point, they were all real. So the ones in doctor's offices or the ones in schoolrooms, like definitely the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. they would have been a real skeleton before they started making. The ones they do nowadays, I think, are mostly vacuum formed. Some of them might be blow molded plastic, but definitely mm-hmm. those hollow plastic versions. But yeah, those, if it's that heavy weighted skeleton, it's probably real. If it came from your old science classroom from the 60s, it's probably a real skeleton.
Which, oh, that would just freak me out if I had to. I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But that is where the curse of the Poltergeist came from, was because of these skeletons.
Right. And going back to the famous line of "they're here," I think that's another interesting prop thing because that's used on the cover of Poltergeist and all the marketing. Mm-hmm. She's in front of a TV screen because that's where the ghosts are communicating to her. And so, you know, it's very famously the television has static playing and she's kind of hearing something that's not quite there. And so they did the remake just a few years ago, and obviously it was made contemporary, and one of the things about a contemporary television is it doesn't really show static anymore. It's, you know, unless you're looking with an antenna, but even then it's all digital now, so there's no way that mm-hmm. static's generated, and usually the TV's kind of cut to black when there's static. So, you know, you watch the remake, and they kind of have this, like, jumbled digital video mess going on this widescreen, you know, giant screen flat TV, which really, you know, it really changes the whole, like, feel of the thing. You know, if it's a television showing static, it's like, oh, that's what a TV's doing. And if it's this television showing this, like, you know, demonic noise, you're like, oh, there's something scary going on. And so it really takes out that, like, the scariness of, like, it's just a regular object in the original one, as opposed to, like, this specially made prop made to be scary. So anyway, that's Poltergeist. Now, you haven't really seen that many other scary movies, but Psycho is pretty well known. I think we could talk about that.
Yeah, Psycho's definitely a well-known horror film, and I have not seen it, and most likely will never see it. But I have read a lot about it, and, you know, I know what it's about and everything. And I was actually just reading an article last week, I think, about the movie, and the actress who plays Norman Bates' mother, Janet Leigh, I believe is how you pronounce her last name. Janet Leigh actually was so terrified after doing this film that she actually never took a shower for the rest of her life. She only took baths.
Right.
Because of that shower scene. And apparently that shower scene took a full 7 days to make.
Right.
And it was only a 45-second clip in the show. And Alfred Hitchcock was just very insistent of redoing it and making it as real as possible with this knife coming at this actress. And apparently they used several melons for the Foley effect of the stabbing.
Right.
So they just had that backstage, you know, ready to go every single time. But yeah, apparently after watching it, actually, when she heard herself scream, she just said, nope, never taking a shower. Not going to take that risk.
Yeah. I think a lot of people did not want to take a shower after watching that scene. The knife is definitely a very iconic horror prop. Even the way, like, the shower curtain, the rings are, you know, torn from the rod. It's very iconic. What's interesting is, you know, you watch it, it's a lot of really fast cuts, which explains why it took so long to film it. But you never actually see the knife stabbed into her. You see flashes of her skin and you see flashes of the knife, but you never see it actually touching her. So that's really interesting. And another interesting prop trivia bit about that moment is right before she gets in the shower, there's a shot of a toilet flushing, and that was the first time a toilet was shown flushing on film.
Really? That's funny. Yes. Making magic. I wonder why. I wonder, do you think it was just kind of, I don't know, weird, or to show a toilet flushing on TV, or just a coincidence that it just never had happened before?
Probably just some, like, unspoken code, like, we do not show a toilet being flushed. I mean, there was a lot of groundbreaking things with that film. It was obviously Janet Leigh was, like, the headliner, and halfway through the film, she's killed, and you're suddenly watching a different character, which just totally, threw audiences for a loop.
And also, fun fact, the actress Janet is the mother of Jamie Lee Curtis, who is also famously known for her role in Halloween, which another Halloween movie is apparently coming out soon.
Yes.
I won't be going to see it.
also featuring a knife, you know, as Michael Myers' weapon of choice. I guess the Lee women are cursed to be chased around with knives. But yeah, the new film is coming out soon. You know, Halloween, of course, had five or six sequels, followed by two more kind of sequels that ignored those first five, followed by a reboot and a sequel to the reboot. But this current sequel that's coming out is imagining that none of them except the very first one occurred. So
Oh, really?
Follow that timeline, if you will.
Amazing. And it's been, what, 40 years?
Yeah. 20 years ago was H2O, which was the 20th anniversary edition or whatever. But yeah, and of course, Michael Myers' mask, this is pretty famously known, but the prop master needed to find a scary mask, and they couldn't find anything, so eventually he found a William Shatner mask from Star Trek and painted it white and gave it to Michael to the actor, and John Carpenter loved that so much, and that's been the iconic mask ever since then.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Oh, the little trivia. Mm-hmm.
Horror is always so famously low budget that a lot of these tricks are fairly clever when they pull them off.
Yeah. Now, another movie that's very, very well known, once again, I have not seen, but has a very iconic prop in it, is Evil Dead.
Right. The Necronomicon, the Book of the Dead. It's supposedly bound in human skin. And I believe the prop, it's changed because they've had, again, Evil Dead 1 and then Evil Dead 2 was a semi-sequel, semi-reboot. And then Army of Darkness was kind of a sequel to Part 2, all featuring the Necronomicon in different forms. And then, of course, a remake that also had the Necronomicon. So so it's bound in human skin, but they also make it look like it has a face. So it's kind of a little of both. And you did the theater version, Evil Dead the Musical.
Yeah, I saw the theater version. Okay. And I remember there just being a lot of blood.
Right.
And a lot of funny songs. And I, at the time, didn't realize it was actually based off a movie. And I thought, oh, I'll go see the movie. This looks like a funny, campy thing. And then after I saw the trailer, I said, no.
No, yeah.
We don't need that in our lives.
But yeah, he also, in the second one, he gets a chainsaw hand. So he now has a hand with a chainsaw. And so the chainsaw is such an iconic horror prop, too.
Yeah.
I'm sure you haven't seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre, if you haven't seen any of the horror movies. But, you know, that came out in the 70s and featured a leather face killing people with a chainsaw. And now that's so associated with horror. It's almost like every cheap little haunted house you go to will have some villain running around with a chainsaw. It's like, this is the tool. This is the weapon that a horror villain will use. It's a chainsaw. And every time you, like, see somebody with a chainsaw out in the neighborhood, you're like, is he also cutting up bodies with that thing? Or
what you doing over there, mister?
Right.
Now, one movie that I have seen, I'm very excited. Great. I've seen this movie. I've seen all of the movies to this movie. I wouldn't say they're sequels, but I guess they're based on, I don't know. Anyways, The Conjuring.
The shared universe. I've seen The Conjuring.
So, I assume many people have seen The Conjuring. I don't know why. I just assume. Mm-hmm. But the movie is about a family moves into this house, and there's this doll, the Annabella doll, that's, I guess, possessed, evil, demonic, and pretty much, you know, tries to kill everybody, like you do on a Tuesday. And it's actually based off of, you know, a so-called true story. And they have the real Annabelle doll actually still on display to this day in the Warrens Museum. And Warrens is the family that went to the house of where The Conjuring took place and everything, you know, did the summoning and did all the, you know, paranormal activity testing and stuff. And apparently they're this well-known couple that does that. You know, they just go and collect items that are possessed and
almost
stuff like that.
Ghostbusters.
Exactly. They're the real life Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And they have a museum full of all of these items, and one of them is the Annabelle doll. And it's interesting because in the movie, they made the Annabelle doll more of a porcelain like doll and very creepy, you know, add all that paint and jazz. But the actual Annabelle doll looks more like a Raggedy Ann doll, which is interesting. And personally, I find that more creepy than the one that they went with. But I would love to know why they chose to do it in that manner, if they just thought, you know, oh, this looks creepier, we're going to do it creepier in this manner.
Right.
Or what?
You know, on one hand, I kind of wonder, like, do the makers of Raggedy Ann not want their doll to be associated with a horror movie and something like that? But yeah, when you see the movie prop, I mean, it's so obviously creepy, it really makes you wonder, like, what parent is going to buy their child this doll? This is hideous right? looking. Why would you buy this for your kid?
Right?
Yeah, there's so many creepy dolls out there. Oh, you know, yes. I think one of the earliest ones, you know, definitely the Twilight Zone, if you've ever seen that. There's the episode where the ventriloquist's dummy comes to life. That's obviously very creepy. Your basic ventriloquist dummy doll. And then there's the Talking Tina episode where, Talking Tina is this talking doll. You pull the string and she starts saying creepy things and she kills the father. And both, like, you know, semi creepy dolls and that sort of thing.
Yeah, my fun fact, my grandmother had one of those dummy dolls.
Yeah.
It was terrifying.
There's something just like innately creepy about how their mouth looks. I don't know. But anyway, I go to a lot of antique shops because I do a lot of prop shopping there. And there's a lot of old creepy dolls out there. And so I end up taking a lot of pictures of them. And I have this small photographic collection of like really creepy old dolls. And so some of them actually are like, you know, years, decades and decades ago, there's these dolls that are made. Even when they're brand new, you're like, why would somebody buy this for their child? This is hideous looking. The proportions are all wrong. They have this creepy grin, you know, the whole uncanny valley where they look fairly fake, not quite real. But, you know, a lot of the other dolls, they become creepy because of the age, you know, when their eyes get cracked and their face is all cracked up and there's like all that sort of wear and tear. And so that's what, you know, you see a lot of movies do that. They'll do some like creepy kind of aging and cracking and things like that.
Which I've actually had to do for a show once. I had to take a baby doll and shave its head off and kind of paper mache around its face and add some clay and mold it up a bit to make it look like a porcelain doll that had been aged traumatically and blackened its eyes and creeped everybody out. So that was a success.
Yeah, it's definitely, there's definitely an art form where you want it to look like it could have conceivably been an actual child's toy, but there's something incredibly creepy about it.
Yeah.
There was a movie I just saw. It came out a few years ago called The Boy. And it's about a nanny who gets hired by this old couple to watch their child. And when she gets to their mansion, it turns out it's a doll. And the couple behaves as if the doll is really their child. And they have all these rules for it. And they tell her to take care of it. And they're very serious. And she eventually realizes she has to pretend that it's a real child. And they go away. So she's left alone in this giant Victorian mansion with this doll. And so at first she just doesn't care about it. But then creepy things start happening, making her believe that the doll is actually alive. And so she starts following the rules and yada, yada, yada. Scary things happen. It was a great prop because it was actually like a lot of effort was made to make it look pristine and like angelic almost, but to such a point where it looked like sinister and scary. Like, you know, it almost looks like a child, but it's obviously fake. And so just like very freaky to see it, you know, sitting upright in a chair when you weren't expecting it to be there kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm looking at pictures of it right now and I'm not happy about it. Like, definitely not gonna see this movie.
No, definitely not. Exciting
to me.
I watched it for some reason in the middle of the night and I immediately began regretting that decision. I don't know why I decided to do that.
You know, it's weird. I love ghost stories and watching, you know, haunted house movies or stuff like that. And, you know, Poltergeist was fine. Well, it was also in the 80s, so it wasn't as scary. But no, this just does not. Nope. We're good. We're not going to watch it. Nope. I have my limits. This is my limit.
Right. There was another movie prop doll I saw once. It's a movie. It came out in 2012 called Hole. And lots of things go on in it. But there's this clown doll, you know, sort of similar to the clown toy in Poltergeist. Again, you know, clowns are just inherently scary. So this doll is vaguely creepy. I think I actually have a picture of it in my first book. because I saw it at this guy's house. He's a prop collector, and he had a number of props from films, and I saw it. I'm like, oh, that's a weird, creepy doll. It's from this movie, whatever. So years later, I see it's on like Netflix or something. I'm like, oh, let me watch this movie. So I watch it, and the clown doll scene comes on, and it's so scary. And I was so glad that I saw the prop before I saw the movie, because otherwise, if I had seen that clown doll in real life, I would have been like, get me out of here. Get me out of that. It's coming to get me.
Oh my goodness, I can't do clowns. That is one of my biggest fears, is clowns. Mm-hmm. Mainly because my mom thought it would be fun to watch It when I was like 12.
Oh yeah.
So, nope, I would have freaked out. Mm-hmm.
Charlie McCarthy, that's the name of the ventriloquist dummy that's like so famous.
I knew it was a Charlie something. Yeah. And my grandmother had a doll that looked exactly like that Charlie doll.
Right. Yeah.
It was not okay.
Yeah, so if you ever see that Twilight Zone episode, that's one of the classics.
Just start crying, backflashes. Now, another creepy doll that, once again, never seen this movie, the Chucky doll.
Right.
That just, I don't understand.
Yeah, that's another one where, so yeah, Chucky, you know, starts off as an actual kid's toy, and it's vaguely creepy looking. It's kind of based off of the My Buddy dolls, if you ever remember those commercials, my buddy.
Oh yeah.
And then it's possessed by this murderer or something, and it turns into like the iconic Chucky doll, which again is so obviously not a toy a child would ever actually own. So it, you know, it crosses that line to where it's like, that's kind of scary looking, but it's not scary in a way like I would run into it in real life. It's,
yeah,
you know, made up for this movie. I don't know. I always find things that should be innocuous suddenly becoming scary. That, to me, is kind of like the hallmark of a good horror movie prop. If it's just kind of like made to be gross or scary for its own sake, then it's like, well, that's just a prop. That's not an object.
So other than scary props or cursed props, if you will, there's a lot of tools that we see on movies and TV that are used and not sure if they would actually accomplish what they're being used for. For example, like bolt cutters, cutting off fingers and stuff like that.
Yeah, the more horror movies you watch, the more you see these props doing things that probably strain the laws of physics. I know I've definitely seen my share of nail guns, air power nail guns being shot across a room and a nail impaling a person to a wall. You know, a lot of times you see them even without an air hose hooked up to them. And I know nowadays you can get cordless ones, but these are ones, they're obviously not cordless, and they're made before people would have cordless ones. So you see them like just pick up a nail gun and fire a nail, and all of a sudden somebody's like stuck on the wall and they can't even get off. You know,
and like,
see, I think it was one of the Halloweens that we were talking about, an ice skate, used to sort of like split a guy's head open, which, you know, ice skates aren't actually really that sharp and they're not really that heavy either. So having the force to do that kind of, takes a lot of imagination. But yeah, I've often thought, like, do like a Mythbusters style show where you test out some of these tools and some of these like implements and see if this would actually do
not
anything
on real humans.
You know, not on real humans, you know.
We would like to state this would not be on real humans.
Get the ballistics gel, you know, get the what do they use for bone? It's like poplar wood has the same density. Just test some of this stuff out, you know. These magic tools that suddenly like obliterate everything, you know. It's like you watch, watch YouTube and you see people like falling out of windows or getting hit by cars and standing up and brushing it off. And then in a horror movie, it's like you see somebody get a paper cut and their whole hand falls off. Like all of a sudden the human body is like jello and the most fragile thing ever.
We'll call up Adam and be like, hey, Adam, I have an idea.
Do a special Halloween episode. I've been watching The Walking Dead and catching up with that. And the one character, Negan, has a baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire. And you would think that's just like, you know, a pencil eraser for humans, the way he just totally makes, you know, body parts disappear just by hitting people with it. And it's like, I think that'll just kind of get like caught on things and not really do anything. I mean, I don't know what you think you've made here, but it's not this magical body obliterating weapon.
And also, like, just, I know my biggest thing is, like, the bolt cutters with fingers just feels painful. And I feel like it could be accomplishable, but I also feel like that would just, oh, I don't know. It's just, right.
Oh, you know what always gets me? There's a lot of movies where you have, like, some steel rope going taut really fast. And it sort of like cuts people in half. I don't know. Like they'll string it across the road and somebody will be on a motorcycle and they'll drive straight through it and their head will go flying off. Or there's the, there's a movie called Ghost Ship where the beginning is they set up some trap where this steel wire goes taut across the entire deck of a ship full of passengers. And so there's like 100 people and they all just get instantly cut in half. And it's like, you know, you work with steel rope. First of all, it's not that strong, you know, and like second, how tight do you have to make it? Like, what is it anchored to that it could fly through a person's body without coming detached? Like, how much can you actually, how many people can you actually cut before it just kind of like stalls?
Right. Oh, but fun fact, I have seen Ghost Ship.
Okay, then.
Look at that. Add that to the list.
Well, it's a ghost movie as opposed to, I guess it has that kind of horror beginning, but then it's about ghosts.
Yeah. But still, I get a point there.
Right.
Well, guys, I think that's all the time that we have for today, unfortunately. Thank you for listening in. And make sure to follow us on Twitter at Silk Mache. Email us with any questions or ideas for future episodes at propspodcast@gmail.com.
And subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. And if you feel like supporting us, check us out at Patreon. That's patreon.com/silkmache. And always go to our website as well, silkflowersandpapermachehearts.com, to catch up on all the earliest episodes.
This has been another episode of Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts with your hosts, Eric Hart
and Ashley Flowers. Also, next week is Halloween, so we're going to be skipping that week. So we will see you the following Tuesday.
Happy Halloween, everybody.